What's on TV tonight?
I see the fossil fuels here in Duckwater, and now in the 75% let's stay here.
It's not really likely that the parliamentary party's gonna make it past the second stage.
And for now, the football, and we got the duck titles, and coming through the first sign here for me, yo.
Lovely, there's nothing on TV tonight. Oh, at least I can grab myself a nice leg. Hello?
Yeah, Howard, it's Edward. Make sure you come down to the bar tonight. We're gonna have such a great bar at Snooker tonight.
Oh, I'm just gonna have a quiet one at home tonight. I'm gonna put on the radio.
Radio? What kind of party's that? Come on down and play with your pal Edward. We're gonna have such a great game down here.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. I'm gonna check out this great show. Ooh. Lethal Duck.
All right, lights, camera, action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going? G'day, mate. How you going? This is Lethal Mullet here. Live on Lethal Mullet Network, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia tonight to chat about duck foo. That's right. We're going to be chatting some amazing duck. That's right. Howard the Duck. Now, this is a film which, love or hate it, well, actually, a lot of people hate it, but I'm going to say there's a lot of love you can have for this duck. The character in the Marvel comic books is fantastic. It was really one of the first major Marvel films outside, of course, of the current ownership of the franchise being with Marvel Studios for film. This came out in 86 and it was shepherded by the one, the only George Lucas, as far back as when he finished American Graffiti back in 1973, yo. And tonight we're going to be looking at that. We're going to look at what brought them to actually want to make this film, to make it, you know, an adaptation of said character. It's interesting. It's certainly aimed at being a kids' movie, but it's also not a kids' movie at the same time. There's a lot of adult comedy and stuff like that. You know, the comedy's certainly far more adult than, you know, it's probably intended to be, I think. But in that, too, there's a lot of fun. The satire in this film is one that, you know, I can come back to once a year and watch the film and get something out of. I saw this in the drive-in back in 1986 when it came out, and still to this day, whether it be on VHS, DVD, and now Blu-ray issue, is a hell of a film to catch. Not an easy one to find, mind you, in the last few years, until the recent Blu-ray release, which you can now get out there. It's a fun film. It's got Leah Thompson, Tim Robbins in it, and many others, and we're going to chat about that tonight here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis. And where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
And I've been working long, long, long days ahead, working in front of a VHS.
All right, folks, and with that, it is time to head straight to the pub. That's right. You've had your news early in the week. It's time to enjoy an old film. Here we go.
Hey, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been real busy, D, you know?
It's just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, have a nice, you know, cold beverage, and enjoy the show,
here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
What is it about this film that still captures my imagination and my attention? Well, folks, now you're going to be able to find out as we chat about Howard the Duck. Hey, folks, how you going? Okay, here we go. We're going to chat here in the pub tonight about the said film of one which, of course, we really know as, you know, certainly one that's won more Razzies than any other raw award, you know. It's literally a complete and utter failure when it comes to its commercial intention for success at a time when, you know, it really probably should have done well. I mean, it's one of those movies which, at the end of the day, aims to hit its audience square, you know, with great entertainment. And it certainly had the effects, and it had some great music too, I've got to say. A lot of those songs, you know, kind of, you know, fill in with, of course, Lea Thompson's role in this, of being the head of a little pop rock band in the film itself. So, Howard the Duck, known where we are in Australia and America, and also known in the UK and Europe as Howard, a New Breed of Hero. This came out in 1986. It's a science fiction comedy, they call it, but it's also a comic book adaptation. It was directed by Willard Hike and obviously had starring Tim Robbins, Jeffrey Jones, and Lea Thompson. It had a very interesting cast. Playing Beverly Switzler is Lea Thompson. Playing Phil Blumbert is Tim Robbins. Playing Dr. Walter Jennings is, of course, Jeffrey Jones. We have Holly Robertson playing KC. We have Tim Rose playing, of course, Howard the Duck. We have Thomas Dolby playing the bartender, Richard Edson playing Richie, Miles Chapin playing Carter, and of course we have the amazing David Paymer playing Larry the Scientist. And of course, there's a number of other people that you're going to see in this film as they pop up, which you'll know from both TV, science fiction, and much, much more. It's a really fun cast, I think, in between, you know, the usual sort of stuff you get from, you know, the time, the 80s, there was a lot of rock stars in movies, like people like Sting and, of course, others joining popular films. But I think this one in particular made the actual actors, in this case, become musicians in it. And in some ways, I always think that some of those scenes are a little bit like Wayne's World with Tia Carrera's band in it, when, of course, they're playing in the pubs and stuff like that. We get a chance to have people who probably are very talented behind the scenes as musicians also be involved in entertaining the crowds. 1986, obviously a big time for film. There's some amazing big films which were out that year. Howard the Duck was certainly one that aimed to be just as big as others there too. So got Gloria Katz producing, written by Hayek and Katz, the film itself, with George Lucas on as producer. And it's something he wanted to get going for him a long time. The screenplay basically was set to be an animated film at first, and of course, later became the live-action adaptation which you now see. And I think the thing is, it's interesting that you know, there's been many Marvel characters over the years that they've tried to get going, even as early as the 70s and 80s, into a proper big theatrical release, and you know. It dates back to Captain America, which, you know, there was some film attempts back then, or at least a film came out, a film serial, around the mid-1940s. So it's interesting that, you know, it's taken them that long to sort of bring it about. So interesting, but it's still, you know, I think at the end of the day, this was the right time for Howard the Duck, but the audience maybe wasn't ready for Howard the Duck. Howard the Duck, created by Steve Gerber, and he's credited with that obviously in the film too. We've got cinematography by Richard Klein. The film's music by John Barry, Sylvester LeVay, and of course Thomas Dolby with songs as well. It was made by Lucasfilm, folks. That's right. In the old days when George Lucas still ran it, and of course the film came out, distributed by Universal Pictures. It was released in August 1, 1986. So, long time ago, folks, but again, this was the ultimate drive-in movie at a time when I was watching things like Greystoke's, which was the Tarzan adaptation, which starred, of course, Christophe Lambert before he shot off to fame with, of course, Highlander. So I remember seeing that plus this film on a double bill at the local cinemas. Drive-in. And this was usually on a Saturday night out here in Australia where they had a double bill and you could go and get hot dogs and Coke or Tab, I believe it was back then. We had a can of Tab and you'd have what they call a you'd have either had a hot dog, same as you anywhere in the world you'd have, or you'd have what we call a sausage roll on a roll. So this is a roll which you'd put literally a pastry, a beef pastry basically, in the middle of, for those that don't know what a sausage roll is. And you'd put that covered in mustard and ketchup. And it'd be just like a hot dog, kind of. It's something that carried on all through high school, actually. We all had sausage roll at the tuck shop in high school. So it was one of those parts of early life, became part of your diet. But also, when we went and saw movies, it was the cheapest thing to get at the drive-in. So we'd all sit back in a car that was reversed with the tailgate up, usually a Toyota Tarago or something as big, or an F-150 Custom or an F-100, and pull out the back and the tailgate, put a couple of chairs in the back, put the sound on and watch these movies, particularly in the heat of the Australian summer out here in Australia. It was humid beyond belief. Kind of humidity we get out here is in the 90s, folks. Yes, that's right. You sweat just standing, you sweat just sitting, and of course, you try and recoup that moisture by drinking a cold can of Cab. That's right, or Coke. So it's interesting, but that was the kind of time that we saw it. So George Lucas had been trying to put this together, as mentioned before, as early as 1973. Now, I do kind of wonder if this is one of the many things he had going after the success of American Graffiti. Obviously, he'd done THX 1138 before that, and it wasn't exactly a rip-roaring success, to say the least. But when American Graffiti came out, it showed that he actually had some commercial and, definitely some entertaining parts and how he told stories. He certainly is one of the greatest storytellers of that time. But, of course, it didn't go to pass until, of course, the 80s and the involvement of all the other amazing talent in it as well. Now, what must be said is that it pretty much made its budget back. So the film was estimated to be about $30 to $37 million in budget. But the box office itself just made it back with $1 million to spare at $38 million. So they spent the money and then gained it back, pretty much, which is not what Hollywood considers a success, which is a shame because, I mean, at the end of the day, this is, it is to some degree a heartwarming film, I personally think. You know, we've got this journey of Howard ripped out from Duck World by forces unknown, brought to Earth, and it's the, it's a little bit like Captain America, isn't it? Because he's a man out of time, or in this case, a duck out of time. You know, think about it. He's a duck that's experiencing all that we have, although in Duckwell, they've got everything that we've got. We've got Playboy, they got Play Duck, which is one of the gags in the film. But, again, he's somebody that, really at the heart of it, is experiencing what Captain America experiences, which is really, really interesting. I think that, it's a great way to have commentary on where we are and the human condition and, a satire. It's a great way to do satire, I think, and have a bit of a laugh at ourselves because, we all take life so seriously. A film like this is a good way to have a sit back and go, life's short, have a bit of a giggle. So Howard's 27 years old, living on, of course, on a very Earth-like world called Duckworld. And he's a duck that can walk just like a human being. He's got two arms, two legs, more or less human-like. And what's great is when we meet him, he's doing exactly what we all do after a long, hard day out there. You know, working. We come home, kick back, we put our feet up, and what do? We watch the TV and read the magazine. In this case, well, yeah, he's reading said magazine as earlier. What's interesting, he's in an apartment in the city, and this weird, crazy force from outer space rips him right out of his apartment while he's sitting in his chair and projects him all the way to Earth. It's that kind of crazy science fiction from the 1980s, folks. It's like all those crazy science fiction novels, the same idea, plucking an alien, entity and bring them to Earth. In this case, the amazing Howard the Duck might be alien, but he's very much like us, folks, and he's got the same ways, and particularly for the time. So Howard encounters humans very, very quickly and doesn't know exactly what to think of them. And this is part of the comedy. Part of the thing is, too, is that he's very, very opinionated duck, which we go to see. He's also got a certain level of martial arts skill in quack fu, duck fu, whatever they call it. I can't remember. And, of course, he saves the lady by the name of Beverly Switzler, played by Leah Thompson. Now, Leah Thompson, of course, was very famous at the time from another movie that came out literally within the year of this, and that is, of course, Back to the Future, where she played the amazing mother of Michael J. Fox's character, Lorraine McFly. And, of course, she had some best scenes and some of the funniest scenes in that film, and, of course, the two subsequent films as well. Amazing work in those movies. The first film always stands apart as one of those great ones. And again, it's another fish out of water story, somebody out of time in this case, literally. It's funny that she's done that now four times, if you look at it. So it's interesting. So where he lands is Cleveland, Ohio. I'm not sure where that is in the States. But again, it's representative of pretty much, your main city, I'd say, suburban in this case, or in the city state of, really just showing where we're at in the 1980s as far as, living and stuff like that. So from here, he follows Beverly around pretty much. And, Beverly, feels sorry for him and lets him stay at her place. Now, what's great about this, at the time, we're seeing what a rock star would go through, at least one that's working in pubs and clubs, or as they say in the States, a bar. Out here in Australia, we call it a pub. So going to, local and seeing great bands like this play is something that we don't see that often these days with obviously everything moving to a much more electronic and digital age. You know, everything's more DJ-based or even not even DJ now. It's all completely electrical, it's to this day, people like my own brother-in-law, of course, Stan Taylor, the DJ out here in Australia, who still keep the home fires burning by going out there and playing live for events. And, hats off to him. Keep that going. As a musician, I just absolutely love that. And it's what I love about this movie. We're getting it sort of sense of the 1980s pop and rock scene. It really plays to that. The entertainment factor of getting out there. It certainly was a different style of music for, coming out of the 70s, which was, again, sort of laden with a lot of heavy metal, a lot of some real great funk music, and certainly some of the great pop ballads of the time. And moving into the 1980s, where it was pretty pop heavy. There's still a lot of great rock and certainly heavy metal coming through with a lot of the hair metal bands which were coming through. You've got bands like going as far back as Iron Maiden and obviously Metallica and Megadeth and right through to, people like Def Leppard as well, which were kind of a little bit more commercial, folks, and that's what I like about also moving towards this more pop sort of sound of music. It's still rocking, an amazing rock score in this, and obviously we see on stage Leah Thompson playing with her band in this. And I think it's one of the staples of the 80s was, being a rock star, being a pop star. And it certainly played out in other forms and other movies. And one of the ones towards the 90s that I always come back to is, of course, Airheads and, of course, Wayne's World. Actually, believe it or not, we've had some requests for Lethal Mullet to cover Airheads, which we might do. If I do it, I'll definitely get Kevin and Kyle on, because I think that's one that they both really enjoy. And certainly we all love it. Die Hard in a radio station is one of the funniest concepts and ideas. And of course, when we hear the great lines by the DJ in it, the disc jockey who says, "The Lone Rangers." You can't pluralize Lone Ranger.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is back, and this time he is in a duck suit. From a script by James Cameron, John McTiernan returns to direct the greatest action picture ever made. Arnold Schwarzenegger is the Quackinator.
"I'm looking for Sarah Quacker. I was told that she's here. Can I see her, please?"
So let's get to it, folks. Let's chat about the plot a little bit more. So Beverly takes Howard to a guy by the name of Phil, who's a scientist. And Beverly hopes that the scientist is able to tell them why a duck is, first of all, speaking, second of all, walking around like a human being. And, of course, this is where Phil is basically turned out to show that he's not a scientist at all. He's actually the janitor of the university, or at least the labs where they are. And to this, basically, Howard realizes that he's now stuck where he is, stuck on Earth. And this case is aided by Beverly in every turn that he goes to. So from here, he applies to be a janitor at the local spa. And this is where some of the great gags start to happen. Again, just like any, man out of time idea, whether it's, again, like we said, time travel stories, or in the case of people that have been asleep for so long, like, the, you know, could even be Dracula, who knows. But people that are in that sort of, even Highlander to some extent, you know, there's kind of some gags about, you know, people have been around for so long and they woke up, you know, in modern times, after they've been in the Renaissance, maybe, who knows. But, of course, it plays very well with some of the scenes in this as we go along. Now, in this too, Beverly plays in a band called Cherry Bomb. Pretty apt title, I think. Cherry Bomb, of course, being a very well-known song from, of course, John Mellencamp back in the day. Of course, John Cougar Mellencamp, Cherry Bomb. Huge fan of that man's work, some great songs from the 1980s, and if only we could go back and get more from the 1980s band that he had. It was just such a powerful time, and some great songs, just some great memories. All right, so obviously, yes, the band's called Cherry Bomb, and from here you see it playing at the club where they've got Howard basically following her everywhere when it comes to, you know, the band itself. And he basically takes on the manager of the band because he's taken advantage of the band itself. Fight basically breaks out. And, of course, he's a martial artist, folks, or a martial duckist. I don't know what you'd call it. But he wins the fight, of course. Again, some amazing funny scenes in that one too. From here, there's, you know, many different scenes where we get to see Lee Thompson's character, Beverly, pretty much get closer to Howard, but also they're both driving each other away at the same time, which is interesting. But from here, we also begin to meet another member, and of course, this is, of course, the Dr. Jennings. Blumbert reveals that he had a laser spectroscope pointed at the actual planet, and he was the one that was basically aiming everything at Howard's duck world. This is what transported him all the way to Earth once the actual invention was activated. So when they go to the library, the laser malfunctions upon time they activated, and of course from here they see that something else may be brought to Earth. Dr. Walter Jennings is possessed by a life form from basically another region of space, a darkness, an evil. And this is where we get our bad guy from. The usual dark overlord of the 1980s science fiction comedy. We get this in a number of films, folks, but played quite well, I'd say, in this version. It's quite entertaining. He's possessed by this force, the overlord of the universe, and we get some
pretty damn funny scenes where the actor takes it to the next level and as far as the performance. From here, basically what happens is Phil helps them try and figure out what's going to happen. There's some truck chases, some action, and of course, some amazing special effects. What's interesting is that the film still ends on Howard then becoming the manager to Beverly's band. And it's a great rocking ending to a rocking film. Let's get on to the cast. Now, we've mentioned some of them earlier, and we're going to go through it in a little bit more, let's just say, deeper look into the characters. Starring as Howard the Duck, we've got in the performing suit, we have, of course, Howard, played by Ed Gale as the suit performer. An additional performer was Jordan Prentice. We have also Tim Rose, Steve Sleep, Peter Baird, Mary Wells, and Lisa Sturz as Howard the Puppeteers as well. And Chip Zien did the voice of Howard the Duck. Now, what's great about it is it kind of feels a little bit like, you know, the Muppets to some stage. You know, this is that sort of technology at the time where puppetry's evolved, certainly to a certain extent. But I think at the same time, this is a lot of it is done just in the acting alone. It's just amazing. It really, really worked. And I certainly like, you know, the work done by Chip Zien for, you know, really nailing a great voice for the character. Lee Thompson plays, of course, Beverly Switzler. Tim Robbins in an early role playing Phil Blumbert. Tim's quite good in this. He's a nervous kind of... Some parts, I've got to say Tim's overacted a little bit, but he's playing somebody who's claiming to be a scientist who's just a janitor, you know, so he's looking at bigger things, but then turns out he does know what he's talking about. We also have Jeffrey Jones as Dr. Walter Jenning, and what's great about him playing the character is that he plays it pretty much, you know, until he's taken over by the Overlord of the Universe, plays it as normal as he possibly can, and then, of course, once he becomes Overlord... Things get amplified big time. We have David Painter as Larry, Paul Guilfoyle as Lieutenant Welker. We have Liz Sagal as Ronette, Dominic Davalos as Cal, and of course Holly Robertson of 21 Jump Street as Casey. So it's great. You know, this is a pretty, I personally think, fun cast. It fits definitely within what it's trying to, you know, make, which is a fun, lighthearted, as sometimes more adult comedy than a, you know, certainly one aimed at kids. That's what makes it, I think, you know, just as interesting. Now, this is based on the comic by Steve Gerber, one that was, again, described to be, you know, always be a funny but detective-like series, you know, obviously very strange, but it being based around a duck, but also with elements of things like, you know, detective stories, a little bit like film noir to a certain extent. And I think that's what makes it interesting. And particularly, you know, bringing to George Lucas to put together, you know, I think that was an interesting sort of idea. One that, you know, is a time when he was probably trying to get together a lot of the Star Wars stuff. It's weird to sort of think about that he was thinking about a comic book adaptation of a duck, or a superhero duck. Obviously, Lucasfilm came involved with, you know, Lucas wanting to get it in there and definitely provide the great effects that we would see in the film created by, of course, special effects giant ILM, who'd just been finished with, of course, the Star Wars films and, of course, the work done on films like, of course, the Indiana Jones series as well. What's interesting too is the look of the film. You know, they've got to establish the movie itself with Duck World, you know, which is this sort of prologue where we get to see where Howard's been from as well. And it's interesting. It's got elements of every city, you know, elements. So it very much looks like a 1980s New York, if anything. And even the down to the apartments has that very, very much set in the 1980s sort of apartment that we see in movies. And it's interesting. It's always an apartment that the average, you know, person working a 9-to-5 job could not afford, even in the 1980s, which is interesting too. When you got characters and stuff like a duck in this case, you know, they obviously then, you know, took
a certain, increase in the comedy, or at least this case, change the apartment to look like one that would be in a duck world. And, of course, there's lots of gags involved in that too, which is interesting too. What's great is, of course, you know, the film itself is a kind of a look at our culture at that time in the 1980s, which is just fantastic. So Hike and Katz began to bring the ideas together fairly early on in the production, and, of course, I think, you know, they took the character of Howard and made it maybe a little bit more relatable, not quite as rough around the edges as in the comic book, as in terms of, I think it's more relatable to us to have a character. It's still, I think there's elements definitely of the comic book, of those that I've seen. I haven't seen a lot of the Howard the Duck, the comics, but, Howard has been seen to be a bit more rude and in some case obnoxious in that case. And so, of course, they've got a character that they've got to have the audience behind. You've got to make it, you know, a character that you relate to. So perhaps a little bit nicer, easier to get along with, you know. And I think that's what was interesting. So, but a case of, if there had been a TV series, perhaps, or even, a longer series of films, you probably would have gone more, of course, of the that duck world angle and actually see a little bit more of what he's going through day to day in the society there. I think that would have been interesting, particularly with the martial art of Quack Fu, which we'll look at in a little bit too. So as we mentioned, obviously there's the great cast. Madonna and Cyndi Lauper were actually looked at for the role of Beverly as well, which is interesting. Obviously too, we've got Jeffrey Jones, who just had success in Amadeus, who's basically come through there. And then, of course, we've got Tim Robbins, if anything, took the job to not only be an early role. I think the only other role at the time that I knew him for was Eric the Viking, which in all cases is really another Python film. It's a great film, actually. Pretty damn funny film. And also the fact that, too, then they had to cast the people that would be the performers for Howard as well. So quite interesting too. The other two is that they had quite a few people try out for the voice of Howard. A couple of those people being John Cusack, Robin Williams, and of course Martin Short as well. Like any, work of voice work, they've got to fit the way that the mouth works, and of course you got to match that. So Robin Williams, for example, couldn't quite get that sort of the hard sort of parts of getting that to match up. So you've heard our look at the film itself, and we're going to delve into the character in a second. But of course, we're going to give you a Hallenbeck scale rating, of course. That's our rating based on, of course, Joe Hallenbeck's way of rating everything in life. That is, of course, from The Last Boy Scout, the rating of 5. 1 to 5, well, it gets on the Hallenbeck scale a whopping 4 out of 5 here at the Little Mullet Podcast. It's a great film. My favourite scenes to this day are still the band scenes when he's out there playing the guitar and doing the lead duck manoeuvres, all that sort of stuff. It's great. I really enjoyed that. And again, it epitomises high-end commercial comic adaptations of the time, particularly when George Lucas has got his hard-earned money behind the effects and, of course, the entertainment that we were watching there and then. It was great. And, of course, just some of the great scenes where we have scenes with Leah Thompson trying to explain the world that he's come from, and of course duck world to earth, all the different things, and also the similarities. Of course, he's a quite let's just say opinionated duck which learns about another world, and I think one that really comes to love being in the world of earth, our world. And of course it's I think down to it, watching on Blu-ray was the real thing. I had it on DVD for a few years, this was probably in the late 2000s when I saw it on DVD. And then only about a year or two ago, came out on Blu-ray. So I got to sit down and, again, watch this film, and it holds up. It really does. It's, again, not for everyone. Of course, commercially, it certainly wasn't for everyone. But I think if you're a fan of just, you know, not just film in general, but a little bit of a lighthearted take at things, and certainly the character is an interesting character. Hard to, you know, really think about any other characters quite like it. Then you only have to wait a couple of years' time from 1986 to the 1990s when the Ninja Turtles came along. And a very similar concept came across where it's very comedic, but also with that sort of lore and mythology of martial arts and, of course, the 80s boom of ninja sort of coming into something just like Howard the Duck. You can kind of see where that could have gone had they taken it maybe a little bit more seriously and less of a comedic tone and aim for that. But again, whether that goes with the character of Howard, I am not sure. But we're about to find out at least a little bit more about the world of Howard the Duck. All right, folks, let's have a look at some of the background on this character and find out exactly what made it particular to the interests of one George Lucas. The character, again, as we've mentioned earlier, has been created by a writer by the name of Steve Gerber and an artist by the name of Val Mayrick. And the Howard the Duck first came out in an issue called Adventure into Fear, first sort of appearance, and that was in 1973. There's been many other attempts to bring out the character in different series and stuff like that. And of course, it's been one that you can see from many, many times. Now, obviously, he's also in the latest series of Marvel films where you see him in one of the Guardians of the Galaxy films. And again, it's probably a little bit closer to the character we see in the comics itself. It's not quite the, I think, more rounded character that we see in the movies. This is much more duck-like in appearance, but it still has the cornerstones of being anthropomorphic. So, which makes it interesting. So, his alter ego is Howard Duckson. I like that. And, of course, the species is Duckworldian, and he's from, of course, Duckworld. So, again, a lot of those little elements that we see in the film are there. But, of course, like anything, when it comes to anything further with Marvel, I think you're going to find some very, very different things than what you saw in the film. I think there's, you know, that was aimed to be much more of a straight-up mainstream comedy and less about building the lore or something like they've done now under the banner of Marvel. So some of his aliases, which are quite funny: Leonard the Duck, Howard the Human, Iron Duck, Agent Duck, and Cynical Duck, which is quite funny. So he is a master of Quack Fu, so there you go. The actual martial art is Quack Fu. Minimal magic and manipulation as well. He certainly has a gift of the gab. I don't know if they call that a special feature or a special power, but he certainly has a way with words in the film, which I think that certainly comes off in the character itself. Maybe I'll learn that by reading some of the comics and see some more of that through that. I'm actually quite interested to actually get into some of that. As again, it's kind of a, it's a character that can certainly parody situations when done right, and the comedy could be absolute comedic gold if done right. So, again, one of the things that's found in the research, you can find this on some of the wikis and stuff like that. Again, the writing is, or his adventures at least, social satire, which you see in the movie. The movie does that quite well. And parodies on things like genre fiction and all that sort of stuff. So I think that's a big part of what made the movie good, because it did play with a lot of that. And it certainly played within the template of 1980s film, which you see a lot of those teen comedies and stuff like that. There's some really good ones out there which probably don't realize that how, I think, good their own stance on comedy is as such. But when you're talking about something like Howard the Duck, it's a great way to do it, because it's, as we've seen in other films, good to have a character that's outside of the situation looking in as our window into us, you know, and particularly when it's an alien duck from another world. Obviously, Chip Zian voiced the character in the 86 film. Seth Green now does it for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So you'll see the duck in Guardians of the Galaxy, Volumes 1 and 2, also in Avengers Endgame, and also in the XD series, so the Disney XD, Guardians of the Galaxy, which ran from 2015 to 2019. And it seems like there's even more on the way for this character as well. Let's just jump to some of these powers and abilities before we wrap up the show. So he's got no superhuman talents, powers, but he has Quack Fu. Now, Quack Fu, as we see in the film, there's sort of not just a mention of abilities when it comes to martial arts, but the fact that he's able to use his powers of martial arts to topple opponents that are twice his size or bigger, particularly when these are human characters, which I think is actually not just comical, but as a martial artist, if you look at the serious sort of side of it, it shows that you can conquer, not only the fears, but conquer an opponent that's bigger than you through just ingenious of things like leverage. You can think of martial arts like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Aikido, Jiu-Jitsu. And I'm talking about, of course, the same one that came from, that went to Judo, Japanese Jiu-Jitsu, is the perfect example here of something like this Quack Fu, where you can use it against opponents much larger than yourselves, but you can manipulate joints, take them down, and really, again, use leverage as the weapon instead of strikes. As I tell a lot of my own students that I've had over the years, when the ground hits you, concrete, the bricks, the you name it, it's going to hit you a lot harder than any punch or kick ever will. You can be the biggest striker out there, but when you've got the wind knocked out of you, you're thrown to the ground at such speed and ferocity, particularly when it's usually the attacker's own momentum driving this, then it's pretty much instant lights out for that opponent. And I've got to say, we see some of this in the way that this character uses it. Now, he's also got some limited magic, which we see in this, but also he has, like Iron Man, an iron suit. It's called the Iron Duck. It's interesting that he's got this sort of, again, I think a play on, well, Tony Stark to a certain extent too. Look, at its heart, folks, I love this character. I've always had something to, really tickle my imagination when it comes to the comedy of the character. I love how blunt the character is. And I think the thing is, being a short guy myself, I kind of like the idea that he is a character that's not the tallest, but he has no fear. Doesn't matter what's in front of him. And, life's so short that he will, not just saying in terms of height here, but life in time is so short. He takes every challenge as it is on face value and, of course, tries his best to face those. But it's also the satire of it. I love comedy, always have. And I think, George Lucas was trying something here. Obviously with the creative team and ILM have done a fantastic job on the effects. They are 80s effects now. By any standard, it's probably not quite up to what we know now, particularly with the budgets they have on film. But for me, it holds a very, very big place in my heart. It's a 4 out of 5 here from the Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien. We'll catch you next week when we're going to be looking at Attack Force Z. Yes, Attack Force Z, the classic Australian war film about Z-Force. Z-Force was a special forces unit made in the 1940s here in Australia, which was to combat any foreign aggressors coming into the country, but also to go behind enemy lines and to seek and destroy, and of course sabotage missions on enemy vessels, etc. A lot of this was a really good idea to put a little bit of an adventure film together, starring a very young Mel Gibson straight out of Road Warrior, also starring Sam Neill. Now, this is Sam Neill, like you've never seen him before. Sam Neill in this film is cold, calculating, military, by the numbers, and is quite a thing to watch. We've got Chris Haywood from, of course, a number of films. Now, Chris Haywood, you're only going to type him in, you're going to see him in a lot of Australian films of the time, but Chris Haywood is also one of the stars of Quigley Down Under. So, Kevin, the Raider Nerd, Reitzel. I hope you chime in and let us know who you think that character is from that film, because I tell you what, he's a very well-known and well-respected Australian actor. And he might even be in some other amazing movies that were shot here on the Gold Coast, of course, at Warner Brothers Studios there. And, of course, we've got John Waters. Not the John Waters that you know internationally, but John Waters, who is basically a musician, a very, very big stage actor out here in Australia. And also, he's a television star, particularly for young kids, when it comes to our version of shows like Sesame Street. We have Play School out here in Australia, and he's been on that for many, many years. And a wonderful musician and singer. Great one from Sydney. We've also got in it, of course, I do believe it is the one, the only, John Philip Law. Now, of course, this is an American actor who starred in Barbarella and don't know too many others, but he was pretty much the big fish in the pond that came over and pretty much tried to, I think, get a bit of a starring role in a film that was centered around Australian actors. But I think he does quite well in the film. This is a great movie. We're going to be looking at it next week on the show, so stay tuned and join us here, of course, at Lethal Mullet. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at The Lethal Mullet. And, of course, catch us on the actual page itself at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com. Make sure you go and check out the merch at TeePublic. Just type in Lethal Mullet. You'll find everything from mugs, hoodies. You'll find also now laptop cases, believe it or not. You'll also find travel mugs. I've got one coming myself here very, very soon. T-shirts, jumpers, baseball shirts, you name it. It's all out there, folks. All at TeePublic. I'm Adam and Brian, the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you next time.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsus on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. But also, the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast, looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPot Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.